13. A few miles rolled by under Eleanor's wheels. On the dashboard, the rotating cylinder drifted back and forth between 60 and 65 miles per hour. The broad, flat desert stretched out around them, marked here and there by distant hills. Harry drummed her fingers on the steering wheel again. She did it a lot. For a while, Eli tried humming different songs under his breath to see if anything lined up with the beat of her fingers. Classic rock, pop stuff, country, movie themes, even a few children's songs he remembered from grade school. Whatever she tapped to was either very obscure or completely random. A mile marker approached them and flashed by.
"Back in 1764, Harry said, keeping her eyes on the road, "a group of British colonials became frustrated with the Empire. With their lack of representation in their own government, Britain had a parliament at this point, but the American colonists had very little say in it."
"And taxes," said Eli. "They were upset about taxes."
"Not as much as you'd think. It wasn't the tax itself. They understood the need for it. And taxes were actually quite low at the time. People simply didn't like having no say in when it was levied or how it was used. Effectively, they felt like they were being oppressed by foreigners, that they were a country ruled by Britain rather than part of Britain. And with several of them, this notion took root, that the American colonies were a separate country."
The cadence of her voice shifted, relaxed. The words came out at a comfortable, practiced pace.
"The idea grew, and eventually it occurred to them that they could be a separate country, that they could declare independence."
Eli nodded again.
"Looking back with the benefit of history," Harry continued, "this seems pretty straightforward. It's what you and I grew up with and were taught in school."
"Wait," said Eli. "You were taught this in school?"
"Of course."
His eyes went up and down her colonial outfit. She looked at him for a moment, then understood.
"I was born in 1885, Mr. Teague. I just like the coat."
Her fingers flexed on the steering wheel.
"But we're getting off point. Don't interrupt."
"Sorry."
"As I was saying, independence seems like a straightforward idea in hindsight. At the time, though, this was revolutionary. In several ways, nothing like this had happened before. Oh, conquered countries had rebelled, overthrown their rulers, and reasserted themselves. Stolen lands had been stolen back or abandoned to the original owners. But for a colony, an established extension of a country, to just declare itself independent, it simply didn't happen. It hadn't happened in hundreds of years of colonial expansion."
"I know all this," Eli said, "more or less."
"I'm setting the stage, so to say."
Harry leaned on the steering wheel and the Model A followed a curve in the road, around a tall, rust-red hill.
"It's one thing for a group of educated aristocrats and upper class to come to this conclusion, but how do you get the farmers and merchants and blacksmiths behind this idea? Keep in mind, many of them were only four or five generations away from feudalism. The idea of nations overall, let alone declaring independence from one of the oldest empires on the planet, was simply beyond them."
"That's silly," said Eli. "People weren't stupid back then."
"They weren't,"
she agreed.
"I've met many of them. But you're looking at it with hindsight again. It seems simple and straightforward to you and me, but they lacked the proper framework."
"So they had to come up with a great sales pitch," said Eli. "And they did."
"Not precisely. They did have a—"
Harry worked the term on her tongue.
"A sales pitch. Thomas Paine and others continued to push the idea of unfair taxes, but again, most people were used to the idea of unfairness and taxes. They accepted it as a simple truth of the world."
"So what did they do?" She let another half mile slip past them.
"They created a dream."
He waited a moment, then waved her on.
"They needed something to inspire people,"
Harry explained,
"for the citizens to rally behind and believe in, something which could be the base for their whole idea of a fledgling nation. And Benjamin Franklin came up with the idea of forging a dream."
Eli shifted his jaw from side to side. "Okay, She took another breath.
Franklin was a scholar and a high-ranking Freemason. While he was in Europe, he used his status as a Grand Master to gain access to certain historical documents and religious texts. With these, he designed a ritual, a conjuration of sorts. When he returned to the Americas in 1775, he gathered some of the founding fathers from other lodges to perform it with him. They summoned Ptah, the Egyptian god of creation, the blacksmith god, and they came to an accord, which resulted in him forging a dream for them. The American dream.
She glanced at his face. Eli stared back at her. Another sign appeared on the road ahead. It rushed forward, passed, and vanished behind them. He never registered what it said. You can't be serious, he said.
I can't say if it's the precise gospel truth. I can only say it's how the story came down the chain to me.
That's ridiculous. Every part of it is nonsense.
It's all true.
Want to throw Santa and the Easter Bunny in there?
Don't be absurd, Mr. Teague.
Absurd? He shook his head. The Freemasons aren't some mystic cult. They're a service organization like the Shriners or Rotary Club. I did night shifts at the Cumberland Farms down in South Berwick every summer through college. They'd stop in all the time after meetings. Even as he said it, Eli pictured the line of rumpled businessmen showing up one after another to buy convenience store coffee or gasoline.
A service organization which goes back thousands of years, she said. One that many of the founding fathers happened to belong to.
He shook his head. It's nonsense. She shrugged. You're saying the American dream is an actual physical thing?
Yes.
It's an actual thing that a group of Freemasons had a god make for them so they could convince everyone in the country to leave England?
That's the gist of it, yes.
He stared out at the desert. The shadows of hills and stones and lumpy cacti stretched longer as the sun sank behind them. That's completely nuts.
And yet,
she said,
like the Garrett carburetor, still true.
Eli crossed his arms. The Model A ate up another mile of highway with its tires before he spoke again. So, the whole American Revolution happened because of an Egyptian god?
Such a silly idea, I know,
said Harry.
If it was true, there'd be giant obelisks in the nation's capital, pyramids on the currency, noticeable things like that.
Eli opened his mouth to respond, then shut it. Is this dream in Washington? He asked half a mile later.
I don't think so, no.
Philadelphia?
No.
Where is it? Can we go see it? She shook her head.
I'm afraid not.
Why not?
Because no one knows where it's gone. It was stolen from the place it was kept. I'm searching for it. Many people are.
Right, he said. You're all searching for the American dream. He rubbed his eyes.
I did tell you it was a lot to take in all at once, and we've barely scratched the surface.
How? He started. The sentence died after the one word. Why do you... Did you make all of this up?
Of course not.
She frowned and gave him a disappointed look. So where's it all coming from? Where did you hear this? She sighed and focused on the road.
Around. Down the chain. The person who brought me into the search told me most of it.
Most of it?
People talk, they trade information.
So all of this is just stories you've heard?
Not just stories. People have been observing and testing this for hundreds of years.
Hundreds?
Yes, hundreds. We travel in history, Mr. Teague. We've spent more years searching for the dream than the country's actually existed.
How's that even possible?
It's a big country,
she said,
with a lot of history behind it. If you're going for square footage, it has an amazing amount of history for such a relatively young nation.
How long have you been searching for it? She glanced at him.
Just over 9 years.
He blinked. How old are you?
A gentleman shouldn't ask such a thing of a lady.
I don't think I'm much of a gentleman, said Eli. And I'm really getting the sense you're not much of a lady.
And there's that wit again.
My point is, you can't be much older than me.
I turn 30 in a few months,
she said.
More or less.
More or less?
It's hard to keep track when you don't see the months in order. I may be 30 already. No more than that, though. Maybe just 29?
She glanced away from the road to meet his eyes.
I was 19 when I first went on the road.
That's young.
Old for the time I was raised. I had friends who were married at 18. My parents were worried I'd be an old maid.
Eli let a mile go by, and then another. So, you're searching for the American dream. Harry nodded.
Yes.
And the car, Eleanor, is a time machine, like in Back to the Future.
What?
He waved a hand at the dashboard. Is that what all the switches are, controls or something?
That's the ignition. I don't want to risk losing a key, and we... I needed some way to safeguard her against hijacking.
So Eleanor is...
Just a car. With some modifications to the engine and the ignition.
But it travels through time. Her head bobbed back and forth.
The car travels through history, yes,
she said.
But we're not traveling through history because of the car, if that makes sense.
Not really. Her fingers tapped out another verse of something on the wheel.
You can put on fancy shoes and run,
she said.
But the shoes aren't making you run. You aren't running solely because you're wearing the shoes.
I think I'm still missing something. She nodded slowly, and Eli could sense her organizing thoughts as the Model A covered more distance.
Have you ever heard people talk of a town or part of a city that's, say, stuck in the 1950s or the 1920s or the last century? Sayings like that.
Yeah, of course.
Well, sometimes, more times than you'd think, they are.
They are...
Stuck. Trapped in history. A road or a neighborhood or a whole town where it's still 1950 or 1920 or 1875.
You mean they never developed?
I mean they never left. History slipped past them and they're still stuck in 1950. It's been 1950 there for decades. You see, the dream was intended to allow people's hopes and beliefs to become true. It allows people to live how they want. In some cases, it can even reshape the world.
How?
For the sake of argument,
she explained, back on familiar ground.
Let us say a great number of people believe the same thing, that this town or that era is the pinnacle of how things should always be. The mindsets, the culture, the technology, they believe this is a moment which defines the very best of America. Or, in a few rare cases, the very worst of it.
Okay.
When enough of these people get together, their belief focuses the dream, and it makes these things so. That point is pinned down and stuck, while the rest of history moves on past it, or piles up around it, really. That's what the dream does in these places,
Harry said.
It brings things to a halt. The people there decide they don't want things to change, so they don't.
She paused to glance at him.
These are the slick spots, the places we can skid across history.
Eli looked out at the desert. The sun was on the horizon behind them. Shadows covered most of the landscape, broken by a few fierce slashes of daylight. When we drove into the town yesterday, he said, the car skidded on the road. The corners of Harry's mouth twitched.
Not on the road, on history. As I said, the dream has created hundreds and hundreds of slick spots all over the country. You just need to know how to spot them. And if you know where these slick spots are, if you get a feel for them, you can use them, go through them. Sometimes slingshot around them for a bit of momentum, so to speak. And they can take you any when in America's history.
Any when?
Well, within certain limits. Geographically, the late 1700s is all the East Coast. Then there's the Louisiana Purchase, which opens up a lot of territory for us. No Texas until the end of 1849, and no California until 1850. Alaska's a little tricky because it's not connected, but I know a few folks who've done it.
What about Hawaii?
There aren't any roads to Hawaii. Don't be foolish, Mr. Teague.
Right, he said. foolish.
A few spots are very specific,
she explained.
There's a street in Dallas that only leads to November of 1963, and a bus route in Montgomery that goes to December of 1955. A road in Philadelphia will take you to August of 1776. Others are more general and give a little more elbow room once you become skilled at driving them. Washington, D.C. is filled with them, of course. There's a sort of sweet spot that crops up often across the country, from 1945 to 1957, and that's useful. The decade of ultimate, unchallenged American superiority, from some people's view.
What happened in 1957?
Sputnik. Absolute proof another country was ahead of the United States. Kicked the legs out from under a lot of people.
They drove for a few minutes without speaking. The pavement hummed under Eleanor's tires. The engine purred in its coarse way. Harry cleared her throat.
It took me a week to get my mind around it, even when Christopher, my old partner, showed me the roads. I was convinced it was a trick.
It's kind of familiar, actually, he said. She blinked.
Really?
Eli nodded. I took a couple science classes in college. Didn't really want to, but I needed them for requirements, so I tried to find the fun ones, and one of them was an astronomy course.
Navigation?
He managed to chuckle. Not exactly. Not really my thing, but some of it was interesting. Harry turned her head to look at him, to judge him.
You failed the course.
No, he said. I passed. Barely. She snorted. He used his hands to sketch a plane between him and the windshield. Later in the semester, the professor talked about how light and gravity and time and space were all related. He had this really great diagram of space, a huge gridded plane, and all the stars made these sort of depressions in space. Their gravity bent space-time in places, so you'd end up with funnels in the plane.
I believe I've seen similar images,
said Harry. So this time travel...
History travel,
she corrected. It's a space-time thing?
Oh, no, not remotely. But if you're looking for a visual metaphor, that one's as good as any.
She shrugged and the steering wheel wobbled in her hands.
This is more or less how it was explained to me.
More or less?
As I said, people talk and trade information. I've heard a few different versions of the story. We all have our own examples and metaphors.
Another mile passed by. Okay, he said. I have to know.
Know what?
Why? Why are you searching for this thing? What's the point? Harry turned and furrowed her brow at him.
Haven't you been paying attention?
Like you said, it's a lot to get your mind around. She sighed.
At a distance, with a large number of people, the dream can alter the flow of time and reshape the nation. If one person actually possessed it, held it, the entire United States and all its people would all be whatever that one person dreamed. They could impose their will on the whole country.
Eli blinked.
How? I don't know the details,
Harry admitted.
I just know the person who finds the dream can do whatever they want with the country.
But how do you know that? She shrugged.
As I said, people talk. They tell stories.
So, you heard gossip?
It's not gossip, Mr. Teague.
He opened his mouth, looked at her expression, and closed it again. 2 miles hummed by beneath the narrow tires. Eli shifted on the bench and rolled his shoulders. Okay, he said. Let's assume everything you've been saying is true.
It is.
Assuming it's true, he repeated. Shouldn't this happen to lots of people?
What?
Slipping back in time, or forward, I guess. Can you go forward?
Of course. Some of the slick spots extend decades into what you'd consider the future.
Okay, so why isn't it happening all the time? What's that joke, where are all the time travelers? If these slippery spots,
slick spots,
are all through history, then shouldn't hundreds of people have slipped back to 1960 or forward to 2020 or where... Whenever? Harry nodded.
True enough,
she said.
To be honest, quite a few do.
What?
As I said before, we've all heard the stories of the towns trapped in the past. Most motorists slip in one side and straight out the other. Then they drive home and tell their friends about the adorable town they drove through with 100-year-old houses that still looked new. There's also a limitation, she continued. Only American steel goes through. All those foreign cars, the imports, none of them will slide.
She reached out and wrapped her knuckles against Eleanor's dashboard.
Why not?
I don't know,
said Harry. She punctuated it with another shrug.
I would guess because they're not American.
What about American fiberglass? Or,
I believe I was clear that a lot of this is second and third-hand knowledge, yes?
He closed his mouth. You were.
Thank you.
The sun had almost vanished behind them, no more than a warm glow in the side mirrors. Ahead, the sky was dark, and he could see a few bright stars in the sky making their presence known. As if hearing his thoughts, Harry reached out and flicked another switch. The headlights flickered once and then surged to life, throwing a bright oval on the black pavement in front of them. You said most of the people drive through, Eli said. What happens to the rest? The ones who don't drive out the other side? She stretched one finger up off the steering wheel and pushed the point of her hat up away from her face. Her eyes stayed on the road, focused on the patch of light a dozen yards ahead of them. A quarter mile passed by under the Model A's tires. Harry?
Some of them just become lost for a while,
she said, as if she'd never paused.
They spend a few hours, maybe a whole day, lost somewhere else, and go home with a slightly stranger story. Some of them never find their way home, and they end up becoming searchers. A woman I know, Monica, hopped into the wrong taxicab. Got into it in 1977, stepped out in 1936.
And the rest?
The rest,
she said.
Make too much noise. Too many ripples in history. So they're removed.
From the slick spot?
From history, Mr. Teague.
She shook her head.
They're eliminated. Killed.
How many people are we talking about? She shrugged.
200, perhaps 300 a year. There's no way to be precise.
300 people a year? He repeated. Harry nodded. 300!
Is there a problem?
How do 300 people go missing and nobody notices?
Of course people notice. Do you know how many people go missing in this country every year, vanished into thin air? Thousands. Since the day the country was founded. Why would those people lost in history stand out more than any others?
So how do they explain it when their bodies are found?
Their bodies aren't found, ever. They're removed.
Eli shook his head, trying to make all the pieces line up with the world he'd known just that morning. But how? By who? Harry glanced at him.
I think you can make an educated guess, Mr. Teague.
You mean the faceless men?
The faceless men.
She echoed.